Welcome to episode 38 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution, Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael.
And this week we'll be discussing the episode's broadcast in the UK between the 15th and the 19th of April, 2013.
Yeah, it's April and it feels like April. The sun has been shining this week in the UK, at least where we are. So it's nice that it finally feels like it's spring.
Hooray, spring has sprung. It actually does feel like finally we're out of winter.
Yeah, at last. We're going back in Corrie history at the beginning of the podcast. I think we decided this week, haven't we?
It didn't seem to work. Maybe it's easier for people to understand it listening in that position, but it didn't flow very well the way we were saying it, I think. So perhaps it's because we can't deliver it properly during the later part of the podcast.
I don't know.
Maybe it's just our failing, but we're going to have to do it at the beginning.
Yeah, well, we got lots of bits this month. It was Gail's 55th birthday this week.
55th birthday! Congratulations, Gail.
Yeah, and it wasn't even on the show. Gail's not been in it for a few weeks, has she?
No.
None of the plats have. Looking forward to then coming back again.
Maybe she should have asked for somebody to pay off a mortgage for her birthday.
What else has been happening?
It's been 50 years since Dennis Tanner returned to the street after 13 months in London.
50 years since Dennis Tanner's returned.
Wait, how old is he? Three? How old is Dennis?
He's pretty old. He was, I don't know, was he late teenage or early 20s or something when
like
he was first in it?
65, 70, I don't know,
he's pretty old. It's been 45 years since, this is another return. Ray Langton had been away for 2 years.
Saw him off.
Yeah, quoting Harry Hill there. Yeah, so he was away and came back 45 years ago, and it was the first appearance of Gordon Clegg, which means nothing to me. I know that the Cleggs...
Cleggies, boo!
It's always a name that comes up in like discussion of old episodes, but I know literally nothing about the Clegg family. But there's somebody called Gordon in it. I'm sure some of Corrie's longer-term viewers will know. It's been... 15 years ago.
In
between 45 and 15 years, nothing really happened. But 15 years ago, Deirdre was released. The
Yay!
Weatherfield one was freed 15 years ago this week, and she walked out and saw John being led into prison. And also on the same episode, Shannon Tattersall died of meningitis, which was a little baby who belonged to Zoe Tattersall, I think.
That was when it was in the news, wasn't it? That I remember.
Yeah.
Must have been about...
It was exactly 15 years ago.
I remember probably about that age when I was a teenager. It was a massive, public information.
Yeah, when Deirdre was released, all the Sun and everyone was going, oh yeah, we made them change their minds,
no.
Even though they'd filmed Deirdre being released
before that even. I'm saying about
the meningitis.
I remember that
was
when... Yeah, when people suddenly started realising that it was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember sitting around at school with all my friends with a glass, like roll it, roll it on your
see
arm.
If the rash goes
and going,
away.
I don't know whether this means I've got meningitis. Is it supposed to go away or not? I didn't remember.
last bit of Corrie history.
Is 5 years since David was sentenced to 4 months in a detention centre.
Yeah, after his little spree with a baseball bat, whatever it was, when he went smashing up the street.
As far as I can tell, the detention centre just consists of a waiting room where everyone has to wear netball outfits.
right, so that is Corrie history. Let's get on with some street talk now.
Street talk is where we talk about the street.
Is
what
it?
What happened during this week?
Well... We've obviously had the Windasses have played a big part of this week with everything, with Faye wanting to leave Anna and going to live with Tim. We call it Faye Away.
Faye Away.
We had that song when we had Gail Away, didn't we?
Song for anyone whose name rhymes
with away.
With sail.
Sounds
no, because it's Sail Away, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gail. Faye, oh, that doesn't work.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, second up, we're going to talk about kind of the smouldering embers of the Rovers Reburns, which kind of is still kind of going
and from
on.
From that rises like a phoenix from the ashes.
Mary Bobbins.
With her little umbrella floating on the heat.
Nice metaphor.
Thank you.
Ches Miserables is back again this week, and it's seen the introduction of a character that I really, really like my first impressions are positive of Sinead.
I don't like how much you like Sinead. I'm suspicious of this.
We've had Eileen and Paul's troubles, the Grimm at the Grimshaw's storyline. We were trying really hard to come up with some Egyptian puns, but we could not think of any.
Tut, tut, tut. That's a pun. That's the only joke we came up with. And it was staged, completely staged. I can't even pretend that I came up with that just now.
And unfortunately, we've had a bit of a surrogacy.
That wasn't still even clear what that joke was.
Tut, King Tut. I think people got it. I think our listeners are intelligent enough.
No, I'm not saying they're not intelligent. I'm just saying it was so lame that I don't think anyone would possibly.
Well, it's because you made that one up.
Shut up. I didn't make it up. It was completely. You didn't stop me anyway.
Surrogacy, right, Faye away. So it started off this week with Anna in quite a chipper mood. She says she's coping well with Tim moving across the street. She called herself Titanium Anna.
That's a bit too close to Titanic Anna, because at the end of the week she does sink.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But she says the Titanium Anna was the idea, that everything's bouncing off of her and she can take whatever life has got to throw at her, and she sort of does get that tested out this week. So Faye comes down and she's being her usual self, being very, very stubborn and unhelpful.
Can I just ask, is there anything likeable about this child at the moment at all? Anything likeable or redeemable about her?
There is sometimes, because like at the very end of this week, and when they kind of made up after everything, and Faye was like saying, oh, I don't want to be bad anymore. You can tell that there's something nice about her inside, but her being raised by this awful mum has just turned her into a horrible little child. I'm flying the flag for Faye. I do like Faye, even though you're not supposed to like her. And I'm really interested in all the Faye storylines.
Okay,
it's just a shame that it's
I just
boring Anna and Owen.
I don't know what Anna's fighting so hard for this insolent little child. So she comes down. Have you said this? She comes down.
No,
she doesn't
said.
Want breakfast. She says she's going
to
be sick.
Yeah, because she's faking it. Because she stays off school, doesn't she?
Well, Anna takes her to the cafe, makes her sit there. But Roy's like, I don't think so.
Yeah, because if Faye's saying she's got a stomach bug, and Roy's saying, oh, she can't stay here, then
no, of course she can't.
Even though Anna's saying, well, look, she's faking it. But superhero Tim comes to save the day because he happens to be in the cafe as well, and he says that he'll look after Faye. Anna obviously doesn't really want to. But Roy's got an appointment and he says, well, look, if
just get rid of
just
her.
Just get rid of her because, or don't, do I cancel my appointment or not? So Anna's kind of forced to let Tim have Faye.
At Tim's house, he has a surprise. A surprise for little Faye, and it's nothing sinister. Well, actually, it's a sofa bed.
Yeah.
So she can stay over, which I actually thought was really sweet.
Yeah, but it is stupid considering he knows what Anna thinks about her staying over. And because was it the dinner last Friday's episode where kind of and Anna's made it very, very clear that she doesn't want Faye staying over there.
Well, also we said last week we thought there was a bit of a power trip going on here with Tim.
Yeah.
Liking how much excitement he can incite in Faye just by the mere fact of his existence.
Mm.
So I did see a glint in his eye.
Mm.
I don't know if it's just the way he's portraying the character.
I don't know at the moment. It's interesting.
We can't tell, but
we're wondering. We get to find out a little bit about Faye's real mum, because they kind of have this snuggle up on the sofa, and her real mum was Welsh and she loved Faye. But Faye can't remember very many good things about her because she obviously had these drug problems. And she's like saying to Tim, oh, were you ever on drugs? And he's like, no, I never was. And
yeah, they were very keen on making sure that Tim came out of this like a good guy in a bad situation.
Yeah, even though we're led to be still a little bit suspicious, because remember about when he snapped at Chesney last week, he's got a temper in there.
Yeah, he called him an idiot. He never took drugs, but he couldn't handle her taking drugs, and he ran off, and he said he should have taken her with him.
Yeah.
And he let her down, and he will never let her down again.
No.
And that will be put to the test next week.
Well, yeah, he's at her beck and call, really, because he goes and buys her some ice cream.
You do that for me.
When Gemma wants ice cream.
You're at my beck and call.
Get me some Haagen-Dazs.
Get me a curly whirly. I really want a curly whirly.
No, we're recording the podcast.
Right. They're eating the snacks, and she says she's got some DVDs she wants, and he says, oh, I'll buy them when it's payday, and she's like, no, I'll bring mine round. It's
all
very
domestic.
Yeah,
bring my games round.
And nice. Anna comes to collect Faye, and all hell breaks loose because she won't go home.
No.
She wants to move in with her dad. Anna's not happy about this, and she accuses Tim of concocting this little plot to so that Faye can stay and turning Faye against Anna. But obviously that's not what happened, and Tim's kind of a bit surprised at this intensity of emotion that Faye is feeling about him. And Faye then drops the bombshell of, "You're not my real mom."
Yeah, that has to come out. And that's quite an easy one to use if you're adopted.
Anna makes, basically there's a bit where each of the grown-ups makes the other one go and stand outside while they have a chat to Faye.
Yeah.
So Anna goes first and says, "Look, your dad's back for good now, so you don't need to worry about him running off, so you don't need to be so close to him or cloying." Then Tim wants to talk to Anna separately, and she says, "Look, I wish I had the power you've got over Faye, because this is ridiculous." And then Faye overhears Tim telling Anna, "I never meant for her to get this impression that she's going to live here. I didn't think it through, and I'm going to move."
Wants to get
so
away.
I don't know if he's trying to placate Anna or if he's just actually freaked out at this, because he doesn't really want... I mean, you wouldn't, would you? Straight away?
No, it's too much too soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's only known the girl for a couple of months.
Yes. So Faye hears this and comes shouting and saying she wants to be with her dad. And she stays there while Anna leaves.
Yeah, she goes to the cafe, doesn't she? And has a bit of a cry for Roy and Hayley. They're good shoulder to cry on.
Meanwhile, Tim's telling Faye, "Look, you've got to stay with Anna till you're old enough."
Yeah.
So Hayley tells Anna that Faye's just confused, and Anna says, "Look, I should have nipped it in the bud ages ago." And Anna thinks that everything that's going on is probably Tim's worst nightmare, and then she decides she's going to take charge of the situation.
Yeah, because I think she realizes she knows that Tim isn't ready to take on this. No,
and it's a bit painful the next scene, because she
I liked that. Yeah,
drags her kicking and screaming through the street. Well, Tim shouts at her, "I don't want you."
That was actually good. I like that moment, because it showed that he's on Anna's side, and he kind of understands a little bit about what she's going through, and that must have been like really hard for Tim to have done, because
it was acted as like, "Shout it because I don't want to say it," rather than "Shout it because I'm angry."
Yeah,
like, get it over and done with, say it really quickly.
Yeah,
so
I enjoyed that good bit of acting there.
Anna makes him open the door so she can shove Faye out.
And of course Norris is there sweeping the street.
Anna's okay.
Yeah.
Anna's not very happy about this. It's quite hilarious, actually, because Anna and Faye are the same height.
Mm.
So Anna was just getting her into that house through sheer force of will.
Yeah. I thought that more would be made of that when all these allegations of Anna hitting Faye came to light. I thought sort of Norris might say, I did see her dragging her across the street.
I thought you were going to say what I said about how tall they were. I thought we could say, well, she can't have beaten
No.
Because they're the same height. It doesn't work like that. So,
Faye has a real hissy fit, doesn't she? She starts throwing things all over the place.
Only Tim can tell me about my childhood, not
then,
you.
And she runs upstairs when something comes in.
Yeah, she throws everything on the floor. Very sad, and Anna has to pick it all up. She's crying, and she says she's going to ban them from seeing each other. And Owen's like, "Yay!" But is that a good idea? No, not really.
No, well,
and it doesn't last very long either.
No, we thought about whether she should have banned her, or whether I think we kind of decided at the time that they should have just been a bit more strict about, these are the times when you see him, and these are the times when you see me.
Oh yeah, the whole thing has been completely managed incorrectly by Anna, because she seems to spend all the time that Faye and Tim are together acting annoyed, trying to limit the amount of time, not giving her a set amount of time, so that Faye never really knows where she is with her dad. And I think it's no wonder that she's acting like this.
Kids need rules and boundaries and routine.
They do, and they want to know what's going on, and they want to... They're not in control of anything in their lives, are they? So they want to be able to have some vestige of control.
Yeah.
And also, because of school, they're used to having everything in set. This happens now, that happens tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
All she needs to do is say, right, you can see your dad once at the weekend and once during the week.
Yeah, banning her from seeing Tim completely just makes him like the forbidden fruit, and it just makes him all the more tempting to go over to him. So that was Monday's episode for there. On Wednesday, Anna's making a breakfast, but Faye doesn't want anything again.
No, I don't, I hate you.
She refuses to go to school again.
I'm not going to school, you're horrible.
Yeah, but and Anna's still saying, oh, I still love you. She's still trying to get on a good side, and Faye's like, that proves how stupid you are, because I still hate you.
And then
she goes with Katie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Owen tries to assure Anna that Tim will be just a flash in the pan and things will change when he's out of the equation.
Mm.
So he's in complete denial about what's going on, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, and Tim comes into the cafe later and apologises to Anna. She tells him, look, I've made a decision. I don't want you to see Faye anymore. And I don't know what she expected him to say to that, whether he'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But obviously he's not happy at all. He's only just moved in there. He moved nearby especially so that he could see her. So he's not in agreement. So it's not going to be as easy a plan as Anna first.
It is a stupid idea.
Yeah. So we get a nice location shot. We get a bit of Bessie Street outside Brian's office because Faye's been sent there because she'd kicked a chair and jabbed someone's arm with a pencil.
That's what you do at school.
You don't. Not at my school. We don't. We're really well behaved. All the children at my school. Nobody ever gets jabbed with pencils or anything like that.
When we had our BCG injections at an all-girls school, I must add. We spent the entire next week poking each other as we could.
Yeah, I think that does happen.
And that is why I've got the most hideous scar on my arm now.
Yeah, so Brian's actually quite understanding and he says, look, are you sure? I know things are difficult for you. You can't take out your frustrations in that way. And
Anna loves you very much.
And Faye then drops the bombshell. Oh, is that why she hits me? And he's like, good headmaster, I'm going to let you have a think about that. Are you absolutely sure? Is that what you're saying?
Is that your final answer? Well, time to go to the police.
Yeah, so lots of trouble there. That kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. We'd been saying a long time that maybe she's going to bring up the fact that Owen hit her last year, and I don't think that's going to get brought up now, because this would have been the time that that got brought up if it was going to be mentioned.
It's absolutely impossible now for her to bring that up now.
Mm. Yeah.
Sadly. We were all looking forward to that, yeah. And the obvious hilarity that was going to bring, because it would have made Izzy and Katie hate Faye and hate Anna if she took Faye's side. It would have been great.
Yeah, but that can be in a what-if scenario.
They think they've got a better storyline here, so let's find out whether it is.
Well, the social worker and the police officer then go over to see Anna, and I think from the way they're speaking to her, they don't really necessarily believe Faye right from the beginning, because they reassure Anna that it's okay and it's just routine and they need to investigate her, but Faye's not allowed home until they've got time, so
and they need Anna's permission to get a medical examination.
Yeah, they'd obviously need to check for bruises and things, non-existent bruises. I did wonder whether there'd be a little bit of self-harm or something, whether she'd try and get bruises on her arm. She obviously, Faye hadn't thought this through. It seems to have just...
Faye doesn't think anything through.
No, she's very impulsive, and she'd the fact that the whole storyline is resolved very quickly shows that she hadn't thought about it at all. But anyway, we still need to go through this on Wednesday. So she goes off to stay with Gary. Anna's packed Faye's stuff and is really, really tearful when she's handing it over to the social worker and Gary. And she like blames herself, saying, where did I all go wrong? And Gary's like, and Owen are there saying, no, it's not your fault. So poor old Anna, she has certainly not been the titanium lady that we were promised at the beginning of the week. Today's episode, Anna's a bit upset, obviously, that Faye's probably scared about the police station visit. And Owen says, look, don't worry, no one's going to believe her. It's all going to be fine, you'll get her back soon. He's being pretty supportive.
I don't know whether his support comes from a genuine place of love or just complete and utter denial that anything in life will ever go anything other than Owen's way.
Yeah.
It's like bloody minded, like he will not...
He'd probably, if it doesn't, he'd pin the police officer up against the wall and the social worker until he gave her back.
It does appear like he cannot conceive of a world in which anything can go wrong for Owen.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore Anna.
So there, we then cut to the police station, and Faye and Izzy are there together, and Faye's obviously having doubts about the fact that she's accused Anna of these quite serious things, and she's like, oh, is it serious? She keeps on saying, is Anna going to go to prison? So she's obviously worried in her mind that she's lost this one mum, and now there's a possibility that she's going to lose another one, because even though she wants to go and live with Tim, we know really she doesn't want to have Anna out of her life completely.
No.
And Izzy's like, well, it all depends on you.
Yeah,
it's not too late to change your mind.
Nobody believes her.
No, not at all. And then so when she's in there being questioned, She still says that Anna hit her for a bit, and then she asks about whether she's going to go to prison, and then we don't get to see her admitting truth, but isn't there a cliffhanger at the break where kind of she's asked, are you sure? And she says that I'm worried, so she's obviously worried about what consequences this will have for Anna. So we then cut to the cafe, and Anna's overrun, busy at the cafe again, being very snappy at everyone, and you can see how tense and frustrated she is.
Customers. She totally shrieks at
She has
Michelle.
A good old shout at Michelle.
I can't remember what she says to her.
Michelle's just saying, I've heard you've been having problems at home, and Anna's like, oh, it's none of your business, keep your nose out, yeah. I think. And Michelle obviously doesn't shout back because she knows what a difficult time Anna's going through. And Anna's sort of escorted out of the shop.
Yeah, basically
crying.
For her own safety.
Yeah.
Because she's going to go absolutely mad and explode probably.
Yeah. So Anna's very remorseful when she gets back home, and Gary's like, oh, nobody probably noticed. So, but then...
Gary.
Luckily then the social worker walks in and says, Faye's still at the police station, but she's dropped all allegations, and everyone's relieved.
Phew!
Yeah, so you wrote down in your notes here, boy who cried wolf, because you... what was your thinking behind that?
Well, I wondered whether... this could be the start of Faye's downfall, because we all know the story of the boy-cried wolf. And it makes me think that maybe Tim will start hitting her, or she'll say that Tim was hitting her, and nobody will believe her.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting idea. And it seems to come out of nowhere.
Yeah. So, what are the chances that he will hit her? I don't know. They've built in this hot flash of a temper.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to be slightly suspicious of Tim, which we are, and the idea that maybe he's going to... And he doesn't know how to look after her. I mean, he admitted that today. He's not had experience of this. So he may end up finding that he can't cope with it, and he may lose his temper with her, and then no one's going to believe Faye. So that could be interesting. And I feel sorry for whatever happens to Tim once Owen finds out about it.
Yeah, me too, definitely. Okay, so Faye and Izzy come back, and Anna's like, hello, Faye, and Faye just runs off.
Yeah, she doesn't even say sorry.
And Katie, when they're by themselves, has a little word in her ear, and basically says, perhaps you're being too nice to her, and making it worse, making her feel bad. Yeah. And Anna just really can't decide what to do, and Owen's a bit confused, because he thinks, well...
Yeah,
you
got
back
about,
to normal now.
Yeah.
He's so stupid. He can't see that the situation's completely changed her. Anna's heartbroken because this whole situation happened and she'll never win. And then right before the break, she drops the bombshell of Faye should go and live with Tim.
Yeah, so what a big change from the end of Monday's episode.
She's had a complete 180 degree turn, hasn't she?
Yeah. But it is only temporary, like they're saying. It probably is the best thing to do at the moment. Do you think?
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen?
What?
I reckon what will happen is she will realise that he's not that bloody brilliant. He'll get sick of her, and that she'll go crying back. And then the storyline, I think, is probably going to disappear.
Yeah, maybe. Well, we'll see. We'll see. So she says it's only going to be a short-term arrangement anyway. And Owen's like saying, oh, there must be another way. Because he does seem to have grown to like Faye after everything that happened between them, and I think he doesn't like the idea of her going as well, and she just needs to learn to say no to Faye.
No!
But he's like saying all the adoption trouble would have been for nothing and so on, and later Faye comes down and actually they have a nice calm talk together. She's obviously very remorseful about what she does, and she apologises, and she generally seems to mean it, and we get to kind of see the real Faye, kind of this actually quite a vulnerable little girl inside.
I did think it was a bit weird that she says, right, you're going to go and live with your dad then. Do you want to think about it? Right, make a decision now. Obviously, they had to do that for the television. But...
Oh, the fact that she said yes so quickly.
No, the fact that, well, both things. Well, first of all, she said yes. Well, actually, I'm not surprised that she said yes. But that Anna thought it would be an absolutely... awesome idea for her to force a child to make an on-the-spot decision about whether she stays with her dad. It's like, we're getting a divorce, who do you want to live with? You better hurry up because I'm moving out.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Nobody would do that to a kid.
I think maybe Anna knew what Faye was going to say. She knew what she was going to say. Yeah, I mean, we missed out a bit where Anna goes over to Tim and just checks with him that it's okay. maybe Anna just wanted to sort of get it out in the open, and she can't really take it, and it's obviously difficult for her asking that
Preston, of Faye.
Yeah. It's all through the rest of the episode. She's got these tears welling up in her eyes.
I feel really sorry for her.
Oh no, everything's gone really wrong for Anna this week. But she says yes, she wants to go and live with him. So they all start getting her packed, and Anna's fretting and telling Tim about all the rules about bedtime and
what she likes to eat.
Yeah, and Tim's like saying it's okay, it's only getting for a few days, and Anna's like, oh, make sure you give her lots of hugs too. and then Faye's quite sweet just as Anna's leaving and says, oh, you'll always be my mum. And it's almost like the relationship between Anna and Faye is much better in this situation.
It's in a way what she should have done from the start, which is to acknowledge that Faye has every right to want to see her dad.
Yeah.
And give her the access that she actually wants.
Yeah.
She never would have wanted to live with him if she had been able to go there and see him as much as she wanted to.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it hasn't been handled the best. And then we leave.
We end the episode on Friday
with Owen coming downstairs and Anna like in this crumpled, defeated heap at the bottom of the stairs, and just bursts into tears that have been building up in her eyes for the last half an episode.
She works so hard for Faye. Faye will never really understand until she grows up, I don't think.
No.
How much Anna's done for her.
Yeah, well, I do hope we get to see Faye grown up, because, like I said, I do like her, and it'd be interesting to see what kind of person she turns into. Is she going to turn out to be like a Tracy, or is she going to have a personality transplant and turn really nice? It could come back in like 5 years and see what she's like.
Yeah, let's just go on ice for 5 years.
So let's talk about the kind of Carla and Stella / Dev / Mary storyline. We're not going to do everything completely in order, because our notes are a bit jumbled because we couldn't decide what belonged with what. So we basically start with Lloyd and Steve talking about Steve getting fat, which again wasn't mentioned for the rest of the week. I thought that might have turned into the comedy storyline, but it didn't.
He's just like me, he just wanders around going, oh, I'm really fat, and then starts eating a donut. Exactly like me.
And they realise that they better go over and see Dev, because after the funeral and everything last week, he needs a friend.
Yeah, he's recently bereaved. Let's go and hang out with our friend that's lost his wife.
Yeah, rather cack-handedly, Steve asks him out for a drink, but he's like, no, I'm not ready yet. And he's still grieving, obviously. Over with Stella and Carl, Jason sees Carl hanging around with Stella, and he can't believe that he's back together with her. I don't really understand why he can't believe it, because
it's
a week ago, no, when was it? Yeah, no, two weeks ago when they split up, it seemed obvious, but when that scene in the back of the ginnel, that they were going to get back together again. But he can't believe it. And
it's because the people that have started watching it on Monday have got to go, okay, Jason's mad because they're going out.
Yeah. And Stella's saying to Carl, well, we better not beat about the bush about this. Let's just announce to everyone that we're back together again. Gloria comes downstairs. She's obviously eager for some gossip, as we know that she's like. But they don't indulge her. They're still keeping it a secret for a while, even though I think Gloria kind of knows what's going on as well. But the main person that Stella's worried about is Leanne, because we had that little episode a week ago in the bistro with Leanne really, really slagging Carl off for what he'd done to her mum. So, she's worried about what she's going to think. We have a little scene with them going and seeing the Rovers and overseeing the building works going well. And it's still going to be a while before it opens. I mean, that's just to remind us that that's going on, I think.
Wasn't there? There was something to do with money.
Yeah,
Owen needs more money. I don't know if they're going to go down that route with it.
No, I don't think they will.
It seems like it always happens when somebody's business gets destroyed. They go, oh, I can't pay for it.
Yeah, nobody ever has insurance. So Gloria bumps into Leanne later and she says she reckons that Carl and Stella are back together again. And although Gloria thinks it's great, because obviously the sun shines out of Carl's backside in her eyes, Leanne says she's not going to let it happen.
I would not want to be on the wrong side of Leanne, I tell you that for nothing. Oh, no. I'd rather she didn't know it existed.
Yeah, so she storms into number 13, where Carl and Stella are ranging it up a little bit, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And Leanne has a good old moan at them and reminds Stella exactly why she said she would never go back to Carl.
Mm.
And then she says, "You stood there and you lied to me. Thanks, Mum."
Yeah, and Gloria's like, "Well, it's okay. That Sun Eater was a pyromaniac and a scrubber, so..."
Which is worse, I really don't know.
Yeah.
So, Jason's in the bistro moaning about Carl and Leanne, and Dev overhears and then realises what's going on.
Yeah.
And...
Gloria says, yeah, we see Gloria a bit later. She says she's chuffed as mint balls, which is a nice little northern expression, that Carl and Stella are back together.
And Dev's hearing all of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's very, very bitter and yes. Lloyd's obviously upset for him as well because he's trying to be a good mate. Stella's going to go and say something because Carl...
Well, they're all in the bistro.
Yeah, they're all in the bistro. And yeah, Stella says she's going to go and say something because Carl feels like he's in a goldfish bowl with everyone watching him. And she says, "Look, Dev, I don't expect you to be thrilled that we're together, but she cares what he thinks." And she's been really, really nice and supportive to Dev through all of this. But he kind of says, "Well, it's too quick. I can't believe you got together this soon." And she just says, "Oh, it felt right. It wasn't a snap decision." He says, "Just get out of my face." So he obviously can't take this.
Yeah. So Carl rants about how he's sick of everybody and they should just leave because he can't take it anymore. And Stella's like, "Oh, you're just sad. You should..."
I think across the nation, everybody said, "Yes, leave," when Carl suggested that.
Yeah. Bugger off then. She'll sort it out, basically, she says. He's there, cradled on her bosom, like a small child, being comforted by his mum.
Mm.
So at the end of the day, he's really, really not...
No.
Not
yeah.
mature enough to sort out his own problems. He just wants to run away from them.
Yeah, and Steve's only cure for Deb's woes is that they go and play golf together. So... Dev is stressing out on Wednesday's episode that he's had to go back to school twice because he's not used to all this taking children to school. He had to take the children, then he had to get their PE kit, then he had to get their lunch, and he blames the twins, so he's totally, totally stressed out by what's going on. And this is when the storyline kind of morphs into not being about Carl and Stella anymore, isn't it?
Yes.
So Dev can't cope with it, but luckily he's got Sophie there. Sophie doesn't seem to be doing anything apart from running after Dev at the moment, which is very Christian of her, of course. And she tells him that she'll support Dev however she can.
But eventually she decides that she should be replaced by a professional.
Yeah.
Because she tells Dev to hire a bloody nanny.
If only Claire was still here.
Exactly. So Dev goes over to see Stella, apologises for lashing out the other day, wishes her and Carl luck. And that's the end of Carl and Stella.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I don't know why they didn't just say, "Let's go on holiday then," and pack a bag and leave. Because they weren't in it for the rest of the week. They could have had a mini break and be back by Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the beginning of Mary being introduced.
Yeah, so we're just going to skip back to Monday and build up Mary's story across the week. So she's talking about theme nights at the bistro and there's quite a funny scene with Leanne in the background and she's kind of mouthing to Nick that they don't want to have any more theme nights. There's quite some good expressions pulled by Jane Danson there. And Nick's like saying, "Oh, I don't really know. Mary wants to have an Australian theme night and she's got Wallaby Hot Pot on the menu. Do you fancy that?"
I don't know. What would it taste like?
Tough, I would say.
I would say it tastes gamey, like deer or something.
I do not know. Anybody tried it out there? Listeners? No.
Send us some hot pot made of wallaby. We could probably go and get some if we really wanted.
So he says, "Look, I don't want any novelties," which is quite strange.
A bit of a crappy thing for him to say.
The whole realised reason that she was employed was to help him out with some theme nights, really. And how many have they had? One or two since Christmas?
And then he criticises her for coming up with an idea to him about what she wants to do. Like,
it kind of came out of nowhere, really, because there hadn't been any sort of bit build up to it. He's just suddenly decided he doesn't want theme nights. But like, really, theme nights were never going to work at the bistro because it's completely different.
I don't know.
Don't you think?
Well,
I prefer
quite a few restaurants have theme nights, not all the time, but like the French place we like in the road has like new wine night. We don't drink wine. I can't remember what sort of wine.
I'm sure Nick wouldn't have minded a new wine night.
It's like it's a certain type of wine where it's really important that the new lot's out or something.
I don't understand about things like that.
And they have a special night, and they also have cheese. I can't remember. They definitely have theme nights to do with specific sorts of food.
Do they not have Australian French cuisine night or anything?
I don't know about the expats from France, how big a presence they have in Australian cuisine.
So on Wednesday, Mary comes back into the bistro because she'd stormed out on Monday and says, look, I've calmed down, I'm going to give Nick a second chance. He says he doesn't want one and she's still fired. But I mean, it's quite a nice decision. They're not hostile towards each other. He's just kind of gently letting her go.
I think it's annoying. It only happens to make way for this other storyline that's coming through.
Yeah.
It's silly.
Yeah. Because originally Mary says to Anna, look, can you put in a word with Roy about me coming to work back with you again? But Anna, this is when Anna's all in the middle of everything going on with Faye, so she can't really help. But on Friday, Mary sees Deb's advert for a nanny. And I did wonder whether, after Wednesday's episode, whether Mary would get this job, because she is quite a matronly type of lady. Do you think she'd make a good nanny?
As soon as she said, I thought, yes, excellent. Mary would be fantastic as a nanny.
Why?
She looks like a nanny.
What other qualification do you need?
She's got that kind of matronly bosom that you need to be a nanny. Because she's bossy, she's patronising.
I bet she'd do loads of brilliant stuff with the children. She'd take them on all these adventures. She'd off to see these things. I think she'd be cool. I think she'd be really cool as a nanny.
Hey, patronising doesn't always have to be a negative thing.
Didn't she look after Faith like one night a few months ago, and she didn't do necessarily
didn't do a very good
job with that? But for young children, I think Mary would be excellent. But Deb's not particularly sure when she comes up and says she wants an interview. Neither's Sophie, who thinks it's quite hilarious.
Well, she mocks her, basically.
Yeah. Norris also says that Mary couldn't be a nanny and she's not qualified because she's not had any children. And then we get a reminder of Mary's mad mother, who she used to have to look out for. Oh, I like the scene where Mary puts that prospective nanny off. There's this other...
Yes.
Usually non-speaking extra who does get a few lines, and Mary says that she accuses Dev of being a bit hands-on with his staff, if you know what I mean, and this other woman ends up makes a hasty exit. So
well, that's a part that
good shrewd move there from Mary. You were just saying you could have been, if you'd have been an extra on Coronation Street, you could have been that other nanny.
No, I think I was trying to prove to you that I would in no way be qualified for that part because I couldn't deliver a single line convincingly. What was it? Like, what was the line?
I can't remember.
Can't remember it.
No tar.
No tar. No tar.
Well, Deb's already had...
No tar.
All right, you got the part. Deb has interviewed somebody that wasn't suitable already, and Sophie says, look, you're just trying to replace Anita, and that's going to be very difficult. And actually, but he kind of admits that, yeah, I kind of am in a way, and it's difficult, and they have a hug, and Mary comes in to have her interview, and she's all dressed up, all acting formal, and she... I mean, we didn't see a whole lot of the interview, but Deb's already made his decision, hasn't he, beforehand, that he doesn't want Mad Mary doing it. And she talks about her mum again and how she'd cope with the kids. She says she'd dedicate her life to them. If he didn't know Mary beforehand, I'd have snapped her up.
To be honest, in a way, Mary is very much like Julie. When she gets a bee in a bonnet or a project on her horizon, there is nothing that will stand in her way.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they never join forces because they could conquer a country between the pair of them.
They should set up a business together. Although each of them would want to be in charge. But yeah, we kind of leave with Mary kind of hanging her head and saying, well, the bane of my life is that my personality has got in the way. Which is a bit sad, really. But she says, oh, well, good luck to Dev, and Adi and Asher are lucky to have you as a dad, which is nice.
I would have gone...
I think the storyline probably hasn't ended there.
No.
I still think that maybe Dev's not going to find a nanny and might end up taking on Mary.
Oh, yeah, Mary's going to get the job.
Which is great, because it's finally nice to have Mary in a storyline that doesn't involve basically theme
cooking
nights, which is all Mary's done for the past year or so.
And arguing with Norris, because, I mean, everyone argues with Norris.
Yeah,
I argue with him and I'm not even in the programme.
Let's talk about Ches Miserables now. And there's mostly that, but there's a bit of kind of Tyrone and Fizz settling back in, because we at the beginning of the week, Ty's bought some pasta sauce and Fizz made shepherd's pie. They have dinner together. The topic comes again to the fact that it's mad that they live in separate houses, and Fizz is still determined not to leave Chesney all through the week and all for the past few weeks. That's all she's been saying. It's like, I can't leave Chesney, I can't leave Chesney. And Chesney has been saying, leave me alone.
Go away, you nutty lady.
Yeah, it's bizarre that she won't actually
listen to him. He says.
Yeah. But they decide, Fizz thinks that the best way to resolve this problem is to give Katie and Chesney a little nudge so they can get back together properly, and then Fizz and Tyrone can move in properly to the Duckworth house together. So Katie's called round to see Tyrone and Fizz, and they tell her to get back with Chesney and that she should try harder. And Katie does want to get back with Fizz, Chesney, doesn't she? She's in her eyes, it's over between her and Ryan. It was never on. It was over before it even began. And to go and make a point, she goes and resigns from the kebab shop. And he's obviously very disappointed in that, because he thinks that he's going to have a second chance with her. Chesney sees Katie then, and she tells him that she's packed him the job. And now she's thinking about him and Joseph, but he doesn't care. He's got no interest in her. He's obviously realised that she's just as boring as me and you think she is.
Yep. He says to her, whatever. And has a complete U-turn by the end of the week, which I find very annoying.
It's not a...
It is. In the space of 5 minutes. It's like she had some kind of special perfume on.
Characters aren't unknown for doing that in Coronation Street.
On Wednesday, Katie sees Fizz again and says, I've tried everything to win Chesney round. But Fizz has a plan, because she knows what Ches is into. No, not really.
Well, she catches Ches agreeing to go for a pint after work with Kirk. But then she makes up a story about Roy needing some help with moving a cabinet or something, and says, oh, you got to come and help. So Chesney goes to the cafe, and what should he find there? But Katie all dressed up lovely. Cafe.
With a candle.
Yeah. And I thought that maybe that might be the time when he kind of sits and has a proper conversation with her and they start to get back together. But he's actually just annoyed that Fizz has been meddling.
Yeah.
And they have a bit of a chat. He wants to know why she kissed Ryan, and she says, oh, I never wanted him. She says she'd never do it again. And Ches is the only thing I want. I'd do anything to make up with you. But he's not convinced, and he walks out. Good on him.
Well, back at Fizz's house, Kirk's trying to understand the plan.
Yeah, Kirk's being a bit dense as usual, and he can't really understand completely Fizz's plan. But they think it might have worked, because Chesney hasn't come back yet.
And then he comes in. Yeah.
And he sits down on the sofa with a can, and he's back being definitely Ches miserable again.
Yeah.
So, Friday's episode. Fizz is fussing over Chesney's clothes. She's such a... Oh, she's just replacing, trying to be like the mother to him. She's now that we haven't got Scylla, but...
It's annoying. It's annoying even for us.
Yeah, I like Fizz, but I'm getting a bit fed up of this. So Kirk's going to go meet Ches at dinner time, and then we get a scene where Beth is on the phone agreeing to meet somebody. New character alert. It's Beth's niece, Sinead. And she makes a bit of an impression on Sylvia straight away, because she tells her what perfume she's wearing. I don't know if this is going to be like Archie Shuttleworth.
Oh, your favourite perfume contains hints of cinnamon.
Yeah, I'm not wrong. Beth wants Chesney to meet her. She's trying to be Cupid for this episode. Sinead is a bit reluctant at the beginning, because he's got a baby, but Beth's like, oh, no, it's okay. They've split up and he's lovely. And rather sort of cack-handedly again, Kirk convinces Chesney to go to the bistro where this date's going to happen. Initial impressions of Sinead, Gemma, what did you think?
I'd rather ask you that question, because you've got more to say on the subject than I have.
I just thought she's really, really nice. She's a young girl. She's not one of the... She's not tarty. She's not tarty. Yeah, that's the thing. She's not tarty.
She wasn't introduced as like, here is a bombshell.
Yeah, who's this that Chesney's going to go out with?
She's going to beat... What's her face? To the sexiest female in the Soaps Award.
She's just a nice... She's very girl next door type.
Attractive, but yeah, girl next door.
They're not covered in makeup. She's not sort of super, she's not super intelligent, I think we, but she's not stupid. And then throughout the conversations later in the episode, we get to see about all these things that her and Chesney have in common, like liking dogs, for example. We get to find out feel a bit sorry for her because she says, "Oh, my name was Stinker Tinker when I was younger." So we got sympathy for her already. I just thought she was really, really nice character, and the fact, I mean, I don't really like Beth. I don't hate Beth, but she's never really grown on me. But straight away, I like Sinead, and I don't know what her contract is or anything. I hope that she is going to be a proper new character and not just a couple of episode kind of one. So over at the bistro, Sinead's talking to Chesney all about making soaps. Kirk's impressed because he likes soap.
They're all in a soap.
Yeah, aren't soaps great?
How meta.
Yeah, he says he likes something to hold on to in the bath. He also suggests that...
That's really, yeah. So do I.
I'm the one that makes the puns around here, Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk.
He brings up the fact that Chesney's got a market stall and that Sinead should sell her soap there. And that's when she finds out that he's got this dog stall and her mum won't let her have a dog. Seems like a perfect fit. Oh, and
live with our families.
Yeah, we find a bit of... She comes from a big family with two sisters and a nan. I don't know whether we're going to see those later as well. A bit more of
if
a Tinker clan.
If she's popular enough, they will bring them all in.
Yeah, I think so. It also turns out that Sinead doesn't drink, which is very interesting. I don't know what there's no particular reason for that at the moment.
Well, it's because Chess has been drinking a lot, I think, and they want him to stop, because I was worried that it was going to turn into another boring Peter and Carla storyline where he just gets drunk all the time and becomes an alcoholic. So he's kind of like going, "Oh yeah, actually, perhaps I don't like drinking that much, and I'm really doing it."
It seems like she would be a really good influence on him, and it's nice that there's a teetotaler because I don't drink either. And I'm like, oh, she's a bit like me. So Katie and Izzy.
I'm worried about this.
What? No, I don't fancy Sinead. Don't worry, darling.
No, I'm concerned. We're going to have to watch EastEnders now.
No, fate worse than death. Katie and Izzy have arrived at the bistro. Oh, yeah, they're there sort of sitting on a different table because everyone spends all evening at the bistro.
Rovers has been shut down.
I don't know how they fit everybody in. Sinead's like, "Oh, should we leave with your ex here?" But Chesney says, no, it's fine.
Can you imagine what it would be like going into the bistro if you didn't know anyone who was in there? Do you know that restaurant we went to where everybody knew each other?
Yeah.
We felt really awful and out of place the whole time. We couldn't wait to leave. And that's what it would be like.
Yeah.
Like, get me out of here. Why are they all talking to each other? Is this a meeting?
Well, Katie's looking over her shoulder and kind of pining after Chesney. But Beth's
a bit annoyed.
Yeah, Beth likes laughing loads and saying what a great time they're having. And then she says, "Oh, Nick, can you take a photo?" And Chesney eventually is persuaded to put his arm around Sinead for the photo. Which really is like red rag to a bull to Katie, who storms over and accuses Chesney of trying to make her look bad, and she walks off. We later see her outside, bumped into Ryan, and says, "Oh, Chesney's got a new girlfriend and he's practically slogging her face off." Like that. And Ryan invites her out to town, but she turns him down. I mean, it looks like, unfortunately, Ryan is working his way back into this storyline. As much as I hate to say it, I think we might see a little bit more of him trying to woo Katie over. Let's finish off the storyline.
When we saw him appear, we accidentally fast-forwarded it. We were like, oh no!
Yeah, oh great, it's the same with Ryan. So Kirk and Beth and Sinead and Chesney later leave the bistro, and Chesney just wants to go home. Beth's obviously not happy that her little stint as Cupid hasn't worked, but Sinead's like, "Oh well, good luck with you and Katie." She doesn't take it too badly because
she's a nice character.
And she's obviously, she doesn't fancy Chesney yet.
Why would you? No offense, Ches.
He's a flame-haired hunk.
No, he's not.
They go back home and Fizz is not impressed about when she hears that Chesney put his arm around this Sinead, because she obviously wants him and Katie to get back together, and he says he needs to talk to Katie to make things right. And lo and behold, Katie later comes around to come and get Joseph, And they have a bit of a heart-to-heart, him and her, and they agree they need to stop bickering, sort things out, and she asks him out on a date, which is kind of nice, I guess. And when she leaves, he gives her a peck on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
So
should I carry on doing sound effects throughout the whole podcast?
Yeah, yeah, thanks. It's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So we're to believe at the moment that things are on the mend between Chesney and Katie, but to be honest, I think that there's going to be... I think what's going to happen is probably that Ryan's going to eventually get his way with Katie, or... and then maybe Chesney will go to Sinead, or...
It's no coincidence that they've started to get to thaw to each other now, but two characters have been brought in the last half of this episode to complicate things.
Mm.
There's no coincidence that Sinead and Ryan are both in it now.
Katie and Ryan make a good couple because they're both boring together. I think that Sinead could be the making of Chesney, and she's that's going to get him out of this doldrums that he's been in.
He's incredibly boring at the moment, and she could liven things up.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Chesney because I've got lots of nice memories of him when he was little. I think if they're properly paired up together, they'd make a really nice couple. Much better than him and boring old Katie. So let's talk a little bit about the Grimshaws. So the last we heard was that Eileen has decided that it's kind of over between her and Paul, and he slept on the sofa all over the weekend.
Yeah, they kind of joke to each other about getting back together, but he says he's moving out. So Eileen gets upset when Jason comes in moaning about Stella and Carl and tells him to shut up because she's got far more important things to worry about. He struggles to give her sympathy because he's moaning about Stella and Carl.
Oh, yeah, he's more thinking about himself, isn't he?
And then Paul comes downstairs with all his stuff packed and she's completely shocked that he's going so soon because she really kind of blindsided her.
Yeah.
Jason continues to complain and then realises he's being a bit insensitive, and he tries to comfort her and says that stupid cliche of you're better off without him, which I don't know why he thought to say that, because she obviously loved him with all her heart.
Yeah.
And she only lost him because she couldn't bear to lose him, which is like the ultimate irony.
Yeah, so tragic. It's like Shakespeare.
Yeah, it's a bit. So we see a very, very pregnant Julie.
To be leaving soon. She is so pregnant. And how many capes has she got?
We need to make a
cape tally.
Cape watch. Well, yeah, she has an inexhaustible supply of voluminous capes, none of which actually cover her giant pregnant stomach.
So she's going for her shoulders.
She bumps into Paul in the cafe and she puts him up, basically.
Yeah.
He goes to the cab office, Paul does, to give Eileen his keys. And Steve and Lloyd are very shocked because they didn't know this was happening. She's not very happy about the fact that he's staying with Brian and Julie for a bit, and Steve and Lloyd tried to comfort her, but...
Yeah, Brian's not a happy bunny about it either, is he?
No, nobody's very happy about this.
They've just moved into this new place together, and now Paul's in the way.
Did we actually see it for the first time?
I still don't know whether we've seen Brian and Julie's love nest. We must have seen it once, but I really can't remember what it looks like. So Brian's not the only one, though, that's unhappy about this, because when Eileen finds out that Paul's moving in, she storms over to Julie and she's like, what are you doing putting my ex up with you? What's the idea behind that? It does seem a little bit insensitive of Julie, but...
No, she has good reasoning. She's got a good reason. Her idea is that if they're together, if they're near each other, there's a chance they'll get back together again.
Yeah, Julie's so lovely.
I love Julie. I wish she was my pretend sister.
She may be your long-lost sister as well.
No, I don't think so.
So Julie says, look, I couldn't say no to him and maybe they'll get back together. And there's a little scene in the bistro later when Eileen's there and then Paul and Brian walk in and she storms off because she's uncomfortable being around him. Now, Paul tells Brian and Julie, but he later goes round to see Eileen and he's telling her that he's been transferred to North Yorkshire. So this could be writing on the wall for Paul, it seems. Jason comes in and tells her, look, you just should be accept being single and maybe get a dog, a Labradoodle.
Labradoodles!
Yeah, so Jason, insensitive as ever, doesn't really know the right thing to say.
Stupid man.
Yeah. We just get another scene later on with Brian complaining about...
Well, Brian's Julie complaining fancying Paul Julie's and... nesting and buying Paul magazines and such.
So nothing much. So then we get the Egypt stuff happening from Wednesday, because Eileen and Paul were having this dream holiday to Egypt, and they come through the post, and Eileen's a bit torn because she doesn't know whether she should keep them, whether she should give them back to Paul. And Jason says, look, you should give them back to Paul because he bought them after all. So Julie comes into the... is in the cafe with Paul and Brian, followed by Eileen, and things are a little bit awkward between Julie and Eileen, and Eileen tries to give the tickets back to him, but he says he can't use them now, I'm just starting a new job. So he suggests that she goes with Julie, which is quite nice of him, because he could have just said, yeah, give me the tickets and I'm not going to use them. I don't see why you should have them if I can't have them.
That's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll take them. Basically, Eileen and Julie make up when they talk about this amazing holiday they're going to have together. And I quite like the difference between their ideas of what would be a perfect Egyptian holiday, because Julie wants to go and see all the sites, and who wouldn't go into Egypt? But Eileen wants to laze around by the pool. So it's a nice idea of the two sisters going off to Egypt together. And that carries on into Friday. And basically, all there was those bits with them buying the Arabic guide, and Brian seems very interested in wanting to go as well. And if it wasn't school term time, Brian would be on that plane with Julie going to Egypt with her.
She's just talking about, she's going on about Egypt's timeless splendor, and then Eileen goes, let's get bladdered.
How do you say let's get bladdered in Arabic?
She looks completely miserable by the end of the episode.
Yeah, but I think probably this holiday is going to be the way that they write Julie out, so I don't know if she's going to stay in Egypt. She's going to love it so much. We'll find out very soon. I think we're not going to have very much longer of Julie in this. Very, very quickly, bit of surrogacy stuff at the end. Creepy Gary's been hanging around with Tina in tonight's episode.
Today, on Friday, Gary sees Tina outside the flat and he wants to take her to Freshco's. Nothing would make him happier. Owen wants him to go to the builder's merchant, but no, Gary must take Tina to Freshco's. He gets told off when he returns because he took too long, but Tina's worth it.
Yeah, he
after
obviously
the break,
fancies her.
He found window locks and he wants to fit them to make Tina's flat secure.
Yeah, it's how long after it's been broken into he realises they want to make it secure.
They have a little bit of a chit-chat.
It seems, they definitely seem to be getting closer.
I do not like where this is going.
No, I think we can all see where this is going. And then he has a feel of the baby doing its kicking, and
he touches,
it's quite cute.
He touches her stomach.
Yeah, the bond is made.
Oh, the baby can tell that daddy's there or something, and it starts getting a bit like, and a bit creepy.
Yeah, and Izzy doesn't really like it when he tells her later. She's like, oh, I wish I'd been there. That was a special moment. She's left out.
She has been left out.
That is something to look forward to for next week, I think. Nice. Fans of the surrogacy storyline, all two of you. That's it for Street Talk
names.
This week. Been quite good, quite good. Let's get on with our character profile now. This week on Conversation Street, our character profile is Owen Armstrong. He was born on the 20th of September 1958. He's got two children, Izzy and Katie. He first appeared on the 9th of June 2010, and he has been in 308 episodes so far, so it's racking up. He seems like a new character, but 308 episodes,
not
a bad inning so far.
3 years.
Played by Ian Poulston Davies. Sounds quite a posh name.
It does, doesn't he? I mean, do you think we'll get to see him speaking in his normal accent like Fred used to?
Oh, yeah.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah. John Savardin, he had a really posh accent. So he was cast as the psychotic father of Izzy by Kim Crowther, who said he was a wonderful actor and she wanted him in the programme, and the part of Owen was created just for him. Interesting fact about Owen's family that I found on Wikipedia the other day was that the family surname was originally going to be Butterfield. Do you think he seems like a Butterfield to
Absolutely
you?
Absolutely can't believe that is what his name was going
to
be.
I know, you could not take him seriously as this hard man that he's supposed to be.
Because there's a bit in this episode, after we'd spoken about this earlier, in today's episode, he answered the phone like, hello, Armstrong, something or other.
Butterfield Construction.
No, it doesn't work, does it?
Sounds like Butterfingers Construction. Yeah. Just drop everything.
Oh, we smashed a window, sorry.
Yeah, it's just funny that it goes from Butterfield to Armstrong, which is a strong, tough, manly name.
It's like they... they deliberately went completely the opposite direction because they realised how stupid Butterfield... No offence if someone listening to this.
Yeah, if there's any well-armed people called Butterfield there, no offence.
Yeah, don't beat us up.
So the back history to the Armstrong family is that Izzy and Katie's mum was an alcoholic and a drug addict who cheated on Owen. So he
sounds like him and Tim have got a lot in common.
So we watched his first episode the other day, didn't we, on YouTube? Yeah. It was funny how young he looked and clean shaven and thin he looked back, man.
And less full of the weight of the world.
Yeah. Well, he was hunting for Izzy in the Rovers because he was trying to interfere with her job at Freshco's or something.
I don't believe it. He wouldn't do it.
Interfering.
Like that.
That's going to come a lot in our discussion of Owen this evening. Izzy accepted his peace offering and they agreed to have lunch together. He also chatted up Liz McDonald, who was one of his first conquests.
Yeah.
Now, he was obviously a builder, but there was already a builder on the street at the time. Bill Webster, whatever happened to him, had the business there. And he first came in just after Tony Gordon's reign of terror at the factory and blew up the factory. And Bill was supposed to be fixing it, but Owen came in and sort of sweet-talked Carla and so managed to get the business there.
Well, there is a full-time work involved in just repairing the general damage done to the street.
I know, you don't.
Storylines.
Yeah, the amount that goes on there. So that started a bit of a feud between Bill and Owen, but Liz was able to calm things down a little bit, and from then on he was smitten with Liz. Izzy wasn't very happy that Owen would be working nearby because things still weren't great between them at this point. We got an early idea about just how controlling he was, or another one when he tried to dissuade Katie from going on holiday abroad with her friends. He just really, really loves his daughters, kind of, and he wants to protect them, which is very admirable. He just kind of goes about it in maybe not the best way. He's a little bit heavy-handed, you might say.
I couldn't cope with a dad like this.
Yeah.
He's like an evil mother-in-law, but he's their dad.
Yeah, he is. He's like, yeah, a battle axe, but...
Yeah, man.
So he offered, as a builder, he offered some work to Chris, who was brain tumour man, if you remember.
Yes.
Jason, and he actually offered
some... that guy who went nuts.
Yeah, him and Cheryl went off together. Yeah, and he offered some work to Bill, but that later caused more problems when Bill accidentally dropped a bucket of cement over Izzy. Bill later agreed to retire and sell the yard to Owen, which is why he owns it now. So all this time he was kind of dating Liz, but another lady came along and caught his eye, which was Eileen, and he offered her a job doing the books at the yard. I think Owen seems incapable of doing anything to do with sort of numbers because he's got Eileen to do it, he's got Tina to do it. I think he's a bit phobic of... It's because... Well, he likes to avoid the tax man, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. That was something that was
that came
brought
on a
out
bit
later.
Later.
But it does seem like whoever he's sweet on at the time gets to do his books.
Yeah. So she tried to hide this relationship with Eileen from Liz. But when Eileen found out, she kind of berated him for it, and then he threatened to dock Jason's wages for his time keeping, and Eileen then stole some money from his safe to pay Jason. And we talked a bit about this when we did Eileen as a character profile, and that was a moment of a bit out of character behavior from Eileen there. So he was unhappy when Katie started dating Chesney. I don't think anybody would have been good enough for his precious Katie in Owen's eyes. But it was made worse when she started skiving off school to help him out of the market. Now, later on in 2010, Chesney and Katie slept together. Owen obviously didn't want to hear that. He pinned Chesney up against the wall.
Threatens him.
Yeah, he threatens him. And that's quite a common theme for Owen, isn't he? If he doesn't like somebody, he can be quite scary towards them.
I wouldn't like to get on his wrong side at all.
No.
He's very physical.
Yeah, he's an intimidating guy. And Katie suggested that she and Chesney try and find a place to live together, and eventually, after much persuading, Owen agrees to let them stay at number 5 together. And to finish off the year, he arranges to have Jim McDonald beaten up, and then he splits up with Liz. So, not a really great end to 2010. And I think after my first year of seeing him on the screen, I did not like Owen at all. I still don't really like him, but he was obviously brought in as quite a... a villainous character.
Yeah, he wasn't brought in for anyone to like him, I don't think.
No, and that's changed a little bit in recent times, but it's still, I've got my memories of him being a pretty nasty guy.
So in 2011, Owen offered Gary, who started dating Izzy, a job, but then he sacked him after Gary had lashed out after being locked in the back of a van.
Yeah,
because this is because he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he gets locked in, doesn't he? And then he comes out and
he kind of gets a bit claustrophobic and just goes, freaks out. And so Owen tells Izzy she should dump him.
Yeah.
And then Eileen stole £10,000 from Carla.
Yeah, because Carla was paying him for something or other, that's the factory probably. And Eileen needed a roof fixing after the tram crash.
Yes, she didn't have any money for some reason because nobody's insured for tram crashes.
No.
And when he finds out, he's going to call the cops on them, but they've got proof that he's been invaded the taxes,
yeah, because
obviously she's been doing his books.
Yeah.
They return the money, but then Owen still wants revenge for this. He breaks into the house with Jason's keys and takes the evidence and reports her to the police.
Yeah, so she was arrested, but Izzy forced him to apologise
and drop the charges, we assume.
I can't remember now, but I mean, yeah, nothing more really came from that, I don't think. Later on in the year, he purchased number 6, which is the maisonette that they live in now, so that Anna would have a secure home. This is after Eddie left, and it was a bit touch and go about whether she'd be able to stay there. It seemed at this point he had ulterior motives. Yeah, he wanted a relationship with Anna, and I remember thinking, no, they are not very well suited together, and I still don't really think they're a perfect match. I mean, I did like Anna and Eddie together, but from the way he's been acting around her, he obviously does care a lot about her.
Mm.
But I still can't see him as a nice guy. Faye tried to get in between them by sending messages to Anna from his phone, sort of cancelling a date. And when she was caught out, Anna said she'd respect Faye's wishes. And she said, okay, fine, I won't go out with Owen. Although they weren't able to resist their feelings for each other, and they started to date each other in secret. Faye obviously wasn't happy when she found out, but eventually she was slowly beginning to accept him towards the end of 2011.
In 2012, while Anna is away, Owen finds out that Faye killed his fish. What was with Was it creosote?
Yeah, yeah.
And she only did it to annoy Owen.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be upset about the fact that they had died rather than, like, he didn't want them to have suffered, really.
Yeah.
He was mad that she killed them.
He'd also accused David and Kylie of doing it, hadn't he? And
I think totally he was a bit... thought it was them for ages.
Yeah, he's probably a bit embarrassed the fact that he'd been accusing them of this and they actually hadn't done it. So he gave her a good smack on the legs, and when Anna found out, obviously that caused a temporary split between them, and I was very happy, but unfortunately they kind of got back together over the next few months. And that kind of led us onto the surrogacy story that we're into now. He finds out that Katie's agreed to be a surrogate for Gary and Izzy, and flies off the handle at Joseph's christening, if you remember. Now that was, I think, the first week that we started doing the podcast, Joseph's christening. And it was just...
Was it?
Yeah.
God, that seems like so long ago.
Yeah. 38 weeks ago or so.
Oh, God.
He later enlists Tina to become a surrogate because he overhears her saying that they need some money still. And that kind of leads us to where we are now.
Yep.
So,
he's just annoying people and trying to get involved with Anna and Faye.
So, ITV publicity at the time described him as tough but tender. And it's only really recently he's shown that tender side. And
when he was saying that he wanted to be a proper dad to Faye.
Yeah, it was quite nice.
Yeah,
it says that he was a bit controlling, according to ITV, which is a bit of an understatement. Phil Collinson called him quite a dark, brooding character who is potentially dangerous. And of his own character, Poulston Davies says, he's not an evil man with an axe or a hammer. Everything he does has reasoning behind it. He's got morals, but they're his own morals.
I think that's
Don't write Owen
point.
Off. Yeah. He's not an out-and-out bad guy, honest. Which is true. He's not a Charlie Stubbs or a Lewis. Yeah, he's one, I guess, like Carl, who, if the writers decided we want to make him this year's villain,
they could
very easily do that.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to be how he is eventually written out, because nobody stays in it forever. I think he's going to eventually turn bad. I don't know
why they wouldn't do that with him, because if they want to get rid of him, it seems like the perfect opportunity to to use all of this backstory that they've created for him.
I'm just not a fan of the Armstrong family in general. They're just...
At the moment, Owen is just hard to pin down as to whether he's good or bad.
Mm.
Katie, as we have discussed at great length, is boring.
Yeah, very bland.
And Izzy, all she has done recently is whine.
Yeah.
And moan about the fact, like, all the way through the surrogacy storyline, we have not seen her best side, because every single time some kind of obstacle appeared before her, she threw in the towel.
Yeah, fine, let's not do it anymore.
I'm not having a baby then, fine.
They're just not a particularly likeable family. But you get these families that come in for a few years, like the Mortons and the Harrises, and they have a couple of storylines, and then they leave, and...
Yeah.
I'd like that to happen with this lot, but it seems that they're... Maybe intertwined with too many other families, like the Windasses and Chesney. And
I can't see them going all together.
No. But...
They don't have to, really.
What could make Owen a more likeable character? Or do you think he's beyond saving?
I don't know why you should change him, really. There's loads of likeable characters on the soap. You don't need them all to be nice. You don't need them all to be villains, because the villains come and go.
Hmm.
I think it's good to have people like Owen who've got their own agenda.
Yeah, I guess so. You sort of don't know whether to trust him or not.
Yeah, I like him. Well, yeah. I like him being in it. I don't like the fact
that he's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He makes it more interesting. When he's in a scene, you never really know what he's going to do.
No, and I guess some of his kind of more action-packed moments, like when he's pinned people up on the wall, have been quite interesting to watch, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess out of all of the Armstrongs, I would prefer Izzy and Katie to leave over Owen. But
I've got no time for either of them at the moment.
But I'm still not totally convinced about him and Anna as a couple.
And also, I don't like where Izzy's going with the storyline of her, with Gary and Tina getting so close together. Izzy's going to be brokenhearted. Mm. And is the baby going to be hers? I don't know. I can't even be bothered to think about it. It's too... I feel like I've played through every scenario already about that story, and I'm bored of it before it's even begun.
What's Owen going to do when he really finds out that
that's
Gary...
That's the only thing that's interesting about it, what Owen will do, and that's why I think he's a good character.
Mm. Well, we'll see. I mean, it seems like something's going to be happening soon, but we still do have another 20 weeks of pregnancy to go, don't we? So it's ongoing for a little while to come. Let's get on with some news now. Okay, so at the Cabin, news section of the site, a couple of interesting bits this week. There's been a poll compiled by Swiss ratings expert MIPTV of the 50 most influential TV shows, and it wasn't in any order, but Coronation Street was in the list, along with things like The Simpsons and...
Well, I can see here Columbo, Mad Men and Sopranos.
Yeah, there's a good mixture. It wasn't just British and American shows as well, there were a couple of foreign ones, things like... Countdown, which originated in France as Les Chiffres, Les Lettres. But there weren't very many BBC shows in it, apparently, so I think they're a bit miffed. But yeah, I think Corrie has definitely been influential. You mean how different things would be if there was no such thing as Coronation Street. I mean, there had been other soaps before, and I mean, we haven't got time now to discuss its influence, but if it hadn't been on that list, that would have been a real travesty, because it's the first proper soap opera, and well,
yeah,
we're not going to say anything bad about it, are we?
You guys know. You know what we mean.
Second bit of news, the first official pic of the new Corrie set has been released. And I'm just going to bring it up so Gemma can have a look, because I don't know whether you've seen this yet, have you?
Yeah, I saw this.
Oh, did you?
You showed it to me.
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, there it is. We're looking at it again now. So it's this new set that's being built, and... It's still looking quite rough at the moment, although, I mean, you can still see some of the front of the houses. You can see where everything is, and it's a very kind of far away shot.
Yeah, basically, if you haven't seen it, it's an aerial view of the set, which is by a river.
That's by the canals, isn't it?
By a canal.
Or something, I don't know, by some water. It's funny thinking that there's this water nearby, because it's obviously Weatherfield is presented as being quite... landlocked, and Coronation Street just being in amongst a sea of other terraced houses, and it is quite funny seeing it with nothing around it apart from a couple of sort of flatlands and buildings.
Yeah, like an industrial.
It's 7.7 acres, this site, so it's a pretty big bit of land that they've got there. And it's still got a long way to go.
It's not going to finish till the end of the year.
No, so we're not going to be seeing this new set probably until for another year at least.
It all depends on what the Coronation Street actors do with their Twitter accounts.
Yeah, which leads us on to our next bit of news. Well, I don't know whether they're really in trouble, but the Sun seemed to think that Simon Gregson was going to be in a bit of trouble this week, because I love following Simon on Twitter at the moment, particularly some of the things that are going on between him and Alan Holsall. They're just tweeting pictures of each other, these Photoshop pictures of each other to each other. It's hilarious.
We won't bother describing it to you, really, if you want to check out the tweets, because they're funny.
Yeah, but Simon Gregson, was it Wednesday night, I think, tweeted a picture of Alison King and Craig Charles
and
King Lomas together in what appears to be the new Rovers, with a bit of a different paint job. We don't want to talk about it too much because that might be considered a spoiler, but we get to see the inside of the new Rovers before it's been officially released, and the Sun was saying that ITV are very angry at this, and the cast aren't supposed to have mobile phones on their sets.
And I also think it's because, and this is also a spoiler, but I'm not going to go all the way to the end of it, there is a character in the background who shouldn't really be there.
Yeah, this is a character that is supposedly... has been supposedly leaving, and we thought we saw him film his final scenes quite a while ago. So
the gender.
Them. this person is in the scene.
There's two bad things in this seemingly innocuous picture of friends at work mucking about.
Yeah. So surely Simon would have got wrapped on the knuckles for this, I would say.
And I think that also who was the actor who played David?
Jack P. Shepherd. He's another one that's in with these Alan and Simon tweets.
And he said they'll never ban me from tweeting, which I think was a bit of bravado, because if I had to pick between Twitter and a job.
Yeah, I think I'd know what to go for. So that is it for the news this week. Some quite good, interesting news. No boobs this week, though, I'm sorry to say, lads. Let's get on with some feedback now.
Or ladies. He likes boobs.
Okay, let's read some of our email from TVOR this week, who we haven't had an email from 2 weeks, so it's nice to see you again. She says, "Hi guys, another long email from me. Really, I should probably send this through the week. It's getting really on my nerves that everyone thinks Kyle saved Stella's life. He didn't. He tried, yes, but he didn't. He was ready for them to die together until Paul got up the ladder.
That's very true.
And all Kyle did was hand her over to Paul, who could have easily got her himself. Tony got Kyle out to Paul before she died."
Really, Kyle, if he hadn't gone in there, Tony would be alive.
Basically. But, I mean, we don't know what would have happened to Stella if Carl hadn't gone there.
No, don't try to make excuses for him. It's all his fault.
"Even though we know Sunita didn't start the fire, even if she did, she was not trying to kill Stella. Sunita didn't know Stella left the bistro after she was escorted out, so she didn't know Stella was in the pub when the fire started." Yeah, that's absolutely true. "I think John Michie is doing a brilliant acting job. As you say, he's not really sorry Sunita's dead, except for the fact that he's killed her and he has to see Dev's grief and the motherless children. He's doing a great job of conveying that guilt and anxiety." I think so as well. And we've seen John out of character, haven't we? And he's a totally different guy. So he's
very good at
it. Yeah, he's good at being Carl anyway, but he's particularly strong at the moment, I think. Oh, and there was also a bit of a correction for us at the end. Well, for me, because I was convinced that during the tram crash, Eileen and Paul were dating, and you said no, you didn't think that they were. And Tibor has said Eileen didn't know Paul at the time of the tram crash, and I think she got a brutal reality check when she actually saw him in this fire and Tony get killed. I can't blame her for freaking out or even going to his manager, though. That was the wrong thing to do. Paul should have known that Eileen would be worried on his first day back, even though he didn't know she knew about that day's fire. He should have checked his phone as soon as he was able to and at least texted her that he was okay." That's exactly what I was saying. It was really irresponsible of him to just ignore her and have his phone switched off during the day. So, yes, we agree, Diane. We got another email from Steve MacDonald this week. Not Steve MacDonald. I like our kind of monthly emails from Steve. We said last time that he emailed that we can say that the podcast is endorsed by Steve MacDonald. And he says that if he wants to have some fun with it, he can record an audio of himself with his best Canadian accent.
And he does endorse the podcast because we are cool.
Yeah, who wouldn't endorse our podcast? And Steve also told us another funny McDonald's story, which has nothing to do with Corey, but I thought I'd share because it gave me a laugh. He's got a cousin called Ronald who owns a restaurant, and he had a sign out of it that said, "Come and see the real Ronald McDonald." And apparently McDonald's tried suing him and lost. So well done, Ronald McDonald.
Well done.
Great move.
Because they didn't pay attention to spelling. It's very important, as we both say.
Yeah. Final bit of feedback. I put on Facebook the other day about what Anna should do about Faye, and this was after she Monday's episode, when she decided she couldn't see Tim anymore. We just got a couple of comments. One from Claire, who said, "I'd leave the little brat with Tim. Let her see what life would be like with him."
Well, that's exactly what she did.
Yeah, that's really what we've been talking about. And Rob just thinks she should give her a slap.
Owen already tried that, Rob.
Doesn't work. It's more trouble than it's
worth. She goes crying off to her mum.
Yeah. So that's it for another week. If you'd like to send us an email, we haven't had a voice message for a while. I feel in the mood for a voice message. You can send it to conversationstreet@gmail.com. You can leave us some comments on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Follow us on Twitter. We haven't had any new followers for a while, so be good if we could get some more. We're at ConversationStir, and Facebook as well. We haven't had that much conversation going on Facebook at the moment, not to put any perspective likeies off, but it'd be nice to see a few more people sign up so we could say hello to.
Chat about Coronation Street.
Yeah, and you get to know straight away when the new episode's uploaded, because I always post it up there.
Yes.
So that is it. Ta-ra for now. Goodbye. The music for this episode was provided by podcastthemes.com.